Verse 1 says, when you come into the land that the Lord your God is giving you for an inheritance and have taken possession of it and live in it, you shall take some of the first of all the fruit of the ground which you harvest from your land that the Lord your God has given you, and you shall put it in basket, and you shall go to the place that the Lord your God will choose to make his name to dwell there. You shall go to the priest who is in office at the time and say to him, I declare today to the Lord your God that I have come into the land that the Lord swore to our fathers to give us. Then the priest shall take the baskets from your hand and set it down before the altar of the Lord your God. You shall make response before the Lord your God. A wandering Aramean was my father, and he went down into Egypt and sojourned there, few in number, and there he became a nation great, mighty, and populous. And the Egyptians treated us harshly and humiliated us and laid on us hard labor. Then we cried to the Lord, the God of our fathers, and the Lord heard our voice and saw our affliction, our toil, and our oppression. And the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with great deeds of terror, with signs and wonders. He brought us into this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And behold, now I bring the first of the fruit of the ground, which you, O Lord, have given me. And you shall set it down before the Lord your God and worship before the Lord your God. And you shall rejoice in all the good that the Lord your God has given to you and to your house, you and the Levite and the sojourner who is among you. When you have finished paying all the tithe of your produce in the third year, which is the year of tithing, giving it to the Levite, the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, so they may eat within your towns and be filled, then you shall say before the Lord your God, I have removed the sacred portion out of my house, and moreover I have given it to the Levite, the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, according to all your commandment that you have commanded me. I have not transgressed any of your commandments, nor have I forgotten them. I have not eaten of the tithe while I was mourning, or removed any of it while I was unclean, or offered any of it to the dead. I have obeyed the voice of the Lord my God. I have done according to all that you have commanded me. Look down from your holy habitation from heaven and bless your people Israel and the ground that you have given us, as you swore to our fathers, a land flowing with milk and honey. This day the Lord your God commands you to do these statutes and rules. You shall therefore be careful to do them with all your heart, with all your soul. You have declared today that the Lord is your God and that you will walk in his ways and keep his statutes and his commandments and his rules and will obey his voice. And the Lord has declared today that you are a people for his treasured possession, as he has promised you, and that you are to keep all his commandments, and that he will set you in praise and in fame and in honor high above all nations that he has made, and that you shall be a people holy to the Lord your God, as he promised. Lord, bless the reading of his word. You may be seated. This is an incredible passage as we take a look at where the Israelites are at this point. Remember, this is the generation that if they were alive during the slavery of Egypt, they were the babies, they were the children. It was their parents who would have been the actual slaves, who then would have been rescued. And of course, they would have come along with their parents, and their parents have all died out now in the land, in the wilderness. And so now this generation is old enough to go in and take the land themselves. And just before going in to take the land, God begins to remind them that I'm going to give you a method, a plan, as to how you can say thanks to me, how you can demonstrate your thankfulness to me. And it's rather interesting how God is so very specific on how these men and women should be thankful to God. He has a very specific wording of it, but I think there's a reason for that, because it seems that mankind has done the same thing. Apparently, God understood, as well as mankind himself understands, that we as men and women are not always great at being thankful. So I stumbled across last week websites that teach you how to be thankful. And so I'm going to put one of them up on the board for you right now. They tell you what to write in your thank you notes. So it says here, words used on a thank you note should show your appreciation, should express to the recipient that you have recognized the effort they made on your behalf. There are many different words that you can use on thank you notes. And then if you're struggling with those words, here is a website that will help you. This is sort of like, you know, thank you notes for dummies, I think, is exactly what we've got going here. Not that you're a dummy, maybe you just need help with this. So here we go. How about the first one? For someone visiting you, attending an event or an invitation. So they've come to your wedding. So when you send them a thank you note, write these earth-shattering, mind-blowing, creative words on your note. We are forever grateful that you shared our wedding with us. Okay, that was deep. By the way, if they didn't go to a wedding with you and they came to your birthday party, don't thank them for coming to your wedding. Thank them for coming to your birthday party. Maybe you want to use the second one. We are so pleased you could join us on our special day. How about this? Thank you so much for having us over for dinner. If they didn't have you over for dinner, don't write that, unless you're seeking a dinner invitation. Of course, that might be helpful to do that. Why would there be an entire website to teach us to be thankful? Because we're not really good at it on our own. And so I don't mind if you go to this website. Some of you are thinking, wait a minute, I need that website. That's going to be very helpful for me. That's great. Just know that the next time I get a thank you card from me, I'm going to this website. I'm going to be checking things out. Now, if you use the website, I'm still going to appreciate the fact you sent me a thank you card. So your thankfulness doesn't have to be original, doesn't have to be creative, doesn't have to be your own. There's a website to help you. In fact, you know, the king and queen of greeting cards is Hallmark. And so they get a little more specific for you. On their website, they have pages upon pages of things you can write in your card. So let me give you some help. Perhaps this year for Christmas, you're going to get a gift card for Christmas, and you want to send a thank you note. Here's Walmart's help. I mean, Walmart, yeah. You'll probably get the gift card to Walmart, but it'll be Hallmark that's going to help you. So if you want to write your own original statement and not rely on a thank you card from Hallmark, here's what they suggest you write. You're given a gift card, so you write this. Thank you for the generous gift card. Okay, thank you very much. If you get $5 for Christmas, they suggest you write, thank you for the $5 for Christmas or for your birthday or whatever. So if you need specific help, then it looks like the Hallmark website is going to be better for you. What is so interesting about this is that man did not originate this idea that man needs help to be thankful. God knew that man would need help to be thankful. In fact, even in the garden, as God is walking with Adam and Eve, I'm sure that he was expressing to Adam how you can demonstrate your appreciation and your love for me. And one of the things he said is, you can show you are thankful that I created you and I placed you in this wonderful garden by eating everything in the garden but that fruit. You want to show that you are thankful to me, then don't eat that fruit. To which Adam and Eve said, we would rather be thankful to Satan and ourselves than thankful to God. And they've sent us into this spiral of struggling with thankfulness to God. So God, knowing that, does not abandon us, but continues to offer ways that we can express our thanks. So that's what's happening here. He's giving the Israelites this opportunity to express their thanks in such a way that they will know that he appreciates their thankfulness. They don't have to come up with, I hope this is a good enough way. In fact, it's a very rote way. They have a script that they need to share when they get to the temple and everything. But it's God's way of saying, if you really want to show your appreciation, here's how you do it. And he wants them to. So let's take a look at this and see how it applies to us. Look at verses 1 and 2, verse 1 specifically of chapter 26 in Deuteronomy. When you come into the land that the Lord your God has given you for an inheritance and have taken possession of it and live in it. So first let's notice right off the bat several things they need to be thankful for. First of all, when they come into the land. Now they're technically not just walking into the land doing nothing. They've got to drive out nations ahead of them. Nations that are so big and powerful that their parents were afraid of them. And so they perish in the wilderness. So now they're facing the same nations, the same walled cities, the same giants. And God is saying, look, it's going to be like walking in the park. When you come into the park, when you come into the land, I'm going to chase people out ahead of you. When you read the book of Joshua, you can see that literally that Israel's wiping out nations and they're not losing anybody unless they sin. And so nations are running from them and fleeing from them and dying before them. And Israel's not having any casualties at all because God is chasing and winning the victory for them. So he's literally saying, when you come into the land that the Lord your God is giving you, so I'm giving you this land, you're not going to earn it by battle. You're not going to, by strength, you have less people in your army than any of those armies that you're attacking. I'm giving it to you. You're going to take possession of it as if it's an inheritance. So what is an inheritance? Well, literally here in the Hebrew, the word inheritance means to take possession of. It's not inheritance like we think of it. So whenever in the Old Testament it talks about Israel getting the inheritance of the land, it literally translates usually, take possession of the land. It's just a gift that God gives them. Now take possession. On December 25th, someone's going to hand you a gift. And you're going to take possession of the gift, not because you earned it or you purchased it or you did something great for it or you deserved it. It's a gift, and you're going to take possession of it, and you're going to open it, and you're going to enjoy it. And that's what God is saying. I have an inheritance for you. I have something for you to take possession of. It's this land. Now, it also works in the way we look at inheritance as a loving father passing things down to his children. In this case, God doesn't die to give it to us. It's more like a living trust. God lives forever and gives these gifts to the children that he loves. And so it's a reminder to them, look, you're coming into the land. I'm going to do the fighting for you. I'm giving you the land, and it's an inheritance that you'll get to keep and take possession of. And so as a result of that, because you're going to live in it, you're going to want to express your thankfulness and appreciation to me. I'm going to want you to express your thankfulness and appreciation to me. So look at verse 2. Here's how you do it. You shall take some of the first of all the fruit of the ground, which you harvest from your land that the Lord your God has given you. You shall put it in a basket. You shall go to the place that the Lord your God will choose to make his name to dwell there. So you're going to take some fruit off the land that you harvest because it's your fruit, okay? And you're going to put it in a basket and you're going to take it to the temple. That's going to be where God has established the temple. Now, for many, many a couple centuries, this is going to be just the tabernacle, the tent, and it's not going to be until Solomon builds the actual physical temple, but they're going to come to this one central place in Jerusalem. Drop down to verse 12 quickly to get perspective on when this is expected to take place. When you have finished paying all of the tithe of your produce in the third year. See, here's the expectation of what God is doing with the nation of Israel. Now, remember last week, we talked about how three times a year they would go to the temple, and they were religious holidays where they celebrated and thanked the Lord for certain events. In this case, it appears, most people feel like that he's not expecting, this isn't a set steady, every 3 years all of Israel is going to show up to the temple. In fact, it's going to be kind of this rotating event based on when your third year comes up from your tribe. So here's why. Let me just give you the quick overview. They've got to go in, take the land. They've got to secure the land. They've got to live in the land. They've got to plant their garden. They've got to harvest their garden. And then upon harvesting, they're going to take it to the temple. That's about a three-year process. So let's say you're from the tribe of Simeon, and you're first on the list to have your land conquered. So all of Israel, all the men of Israel are going to help you conquer your land. You conquer your land. God drives out the people. And then you, the men of the tribe of Simeon, are then going to go with the rest of the men of Israel and go conquer Judah's lands or Issachar's land. But you're going to leave your families behind, and they're going to begin the settlement process of cleaning up after the mess and making sure the homes are something you can live in, and then they're going to start that process. And so after that, they'll start the planting as well. So the whole land wasn't conquered in a day or even in a year. They went from area to area to area within Israel and continued to conquer the land for the tribes, and then they would leave behind people to begin the process of living there. So the 3 years, more than likely, are different sets of 3 years for each tribe. So the tribe of Issachar would go at the end of their 3 years, but that's because they were early in the conquering. And it could be a year later that the third year comes up for the tribe of Judah or for whoever. So you have the men of the tribes and their families as well. Not only are they going three times a year, but every 3 years, which is going to be different times for each tribe, they're now coming back to the temple and thanking God for what he's done for them. So this appears to be kind of this every 3 year. And this event isn't only a one-time event. It looks like then it repeats every 3 years because God continues to give you the produce and you continue to thank him for what he's done. So it's the food you planted. It's probably from your third year crop, and you're going to take it and present it to the Lord. Now, when you arrive there, you begin what I'm calling the verbal declaration. When you arrive, this is where God gives you the script. He probably gives it to the priest who hands it to you when you come up to the temple. So take a look at verse 3. Verse 3 says, "And you shall go to the priest," this is the high priest in Jerusalem at the temple, "who was in office at the time, and say to him," so you have a script, "I declare today to the Lord your God that I have come into the land that the Lord swore to our fathers to give us." That's your script. That's the beginning of a script. What are you saying? You're literally saying, "I am a living testimony of the fulfilled promise of the Almighty God. That centuries ago, to my ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and then to my own parents, whom he rescued from slavery, God made a promise that we would be in this promised land. And I have the incredible privilege as a descendant of all these people to present this fruit of the ground before the Lord my God. I am the fulfillment of God's promise to centuries of my ancestors who have been waiting for God to come through." This is a huge statement. This is this great set of joy of, look, this is my crop that I grew in the land that God has given me. I am a fulfillment of God's promise. It's a great joy. It's a great moment. Look at verse 4. Then what happens? "The priest shall take the basket from your hand and set it down before the altar of the Lord your God." So it's going to stay there in front of God. And then you have more to say. "You shall make response before the Lord your God." And then basically they list exactly what's happened in their ancestry. A wandered Aramean, that's going to be the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who end up in Egypt during the famine and then settle in the land of Goshen and become this huge tribe of people that then get enslaved and then get rescued and then wander through the wilderness and then arrive. You read those verses there. Okay, this is the verbal testimony of what God has done in this man's life or in the life of his ancestors up to this point. And so he's going to give this verbal testimony. Now look at verse 9. Verse 9 says, "And he brought us into this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And behold, now I bring the first of the fruit of the ground, which you, O Lord, have given me. You shall set it down before the Lord your God and worship before the Lord your God." So you've had a scripted presentation up to this point. Imagine the priest. He's going to hear this over and over and over and over again from every man who comes in. He's going to read the script. He's going to say it as God calls him to say it. But then, after that script is done, it's when it gets personal. And then that man is allowed to, if his family's with him or not, he's going to worship the Lord. He's going to break script. He's going to step aside from the script and from his own heart, thank God for what's happening. Sometimes we get the picture in the temple that it was all scripted and very fine and formal, and you came in and you did this and you did that and you said what the priest told you to do and you got out and left. Well, there were some formal things you did because God demanded it and required it, but there are moments then that after the formality is done that you are free to worship God and thank him from the privacy and personal testimony of your life. And so they worship him. They finish all that. They set the basket down, and then they worship before the Lord your God. And then they party. Look at verse 11. And you shall rejoice in all the good that the Lord your God has given to you and to your house, you and the Levite, the sojourner who is among you. Look at verse 12. When you finish paying all the tithe of your produce in the third year, which is the year of tithing, giving it to the Levite, the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, so that you may eat within your towns and be filled. So what the idea here is that is you've given your verbal testimony to God of thanks. This verbal testimony is a statement of all that God has done in your ancestors' life and in your life personally. You have worshiped before him. You are rejoicing before him. You're sharing in that rejoicing with the Levite you brought with you, with the sojourner. That's the traveling person through your town, through the widow. You're taking care of her. You're taking care of the fatherless. You're helping those as well. You're celebrating what God has done. That is your verbal declaration. Now let me ask you, because I don't think any of your fathers were wandering Arameans, and I'm not sure if any of you were slaves in Egypt. I'm pretty sure that didn't happen, okay? But you have a verbal testimony. You have a verbal testimony. So what I'd like for you to do is flip over to the back of your sermon notes, and I want you to write these three sets of questions. Leave room to fill them out underneath. All you got to do is write the questions right now. The three sets of questions are, who were you? Second question is, how did Christ rescue you? Third question, what does your promised land look like now? What has he done for you? So they're up there on the board as well. Who were you? How did Christ rescue you? What does your promised land look like now? What has he done for you? What I'd like for you to do is today, tomorrow, sit down, get a private place and fill in the blanks. I mean, who were you before Christ rescued you? Who were you before he changed your life? Somebody's thinking, well, wait a minute, Pastor, I was 6 years old when I gave my life to Jesus. There wasn't a dramatic change. I heard a pastor share a testimony the other day of a guy who, at the day of his baptism, said that God rescued me from a life of drugs, immorality, and alcohol at the age of six. And everybody kind of did what you did. What? And the guy said, well, because I got saved at six, my life hasn't gone into drugs, alcohol, or immorality. And then the pastor said, that's probably the greatest testimony of all, that God would step into a young life and rescue that life so they can avoid all that junk that some of us have to wait and go through before we finally see Jesus Christ. So if your testimony is, I got saved at six, don't even remember the whole thing, wasn't much of a dramatic thing, it was hugely dramatic. Who were you when God stepped in and rescued you? You were nobody. You weren't even smart enough to think the whole process through where you could be heading, and yet God stepped in to rescue you at that point. Maybe it's a little more dramatic, and you were older, and you knew who you were and where you were headed. Who were you? What were you enslaved by? What were you captured by? What bad road were you heading down? Who were you at that point? How did Christ rescue you? What did he do? Well, I walked down an aisle, heard a message, prayed a prayer, had a friend of mine come over and share with me, and we prayed together. I was watching TV, listening on the radio. I talked to mom or dad. How did Christ rescue your life? What does your promised land look like right now? I mean, what has he done for you since you gave yourself to him? So take some time in the next 24 or 36 hours and answer these questions. Then I want you to stick them in a jar. Have everybody in your family stick them in a jar somewhere in your house or a box or something. And maybe on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve, you whip them out and you read them to each other. Because that's what Christmas is about, that God coming out of heaven to you on earth, identifying with you so he could rescue you and save you. And then I would even challenge you that within the next month, you take someone out to lunch, you take somebody aside at school, you take somebody aside in your neighborhood and say, hey, I just want to read this to you. I just want to show you, as I've reflected on my life, of what God has done. And just read it as a testimony to the Lord. Allow that to be an opportunity that you can rejoice and have your verbal declaration. As we look at that, we think, man, that is quite a declaration. But we're going to find out that even though that declaration is great of your salvation, of God reaching in and touching you and giving you eternal life, that is something that was sacred that God did for you. But now there's an expectation that you will do something sacred for God. Let's define sacred, and then we're going to look at it in verse 26. Sacred means to be holy or set apart or clean before God. So keep that in mind. Let's take now a look at verse 12 and 13. When you have finished paying all the tithe of your produce in the third year, which is the year of tithing, giving it to the Levite, the sojourner, the fatherless, the widow, so that they may eat within your towns and be filled, then you shall say before the Lord your God, I have removed the sacred portion out of my house. And moreover, I have given it to the Levite, the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, according to all your commandment that you have commanded me. So let's stop there. So apparently your verbal testimony before God, your verbal thanksgiving to God is not your sacred presentation to God. That's a statement of God has set me apart. That was God's sacred presentation to me. He set me apart. He rescued me. He saved me. This is what he's given me. But now your sacred presentation actually takes place before your verbal one. It actually precedes it. Your sacred presentation to God is the physical things that you do to demonstrate you truly are thankful. I mean, look at this. Verse 13, I have already removed the sacred portion of my house. What does that mean? I have already set aside. The reason I'm here today with this basket full of goods is that I already removed it from my house. So remember how they could do that? If the basket was too big, they could sell it and hang on to the money. So they could be there with money. They could be there with a basket full of foods. We're not talking, you know, a little Easter egg-sized basket here. We're talking probably a huge basket that was carried in a cart that was just full of food that he could have fed his family for a couple days on because it was 10% of what he brought in. And so he said he mentally, in his mind, set that aside. He set aside that sacred portion. Not only did he set that aside for what he would give to God, but look, and moreover, above and beyond, in addition to this, I have given to the Levite, that's my religious leader in my area, the sojourner, that's the guy traveling through, didn't have any place to stay, the fatherless, that's the guy whose dad died and he had no way to be taken care of, so I stepped in and helped him, that's the widow whose husband died, I helped her too. And so not only have I pulled aside my 10% to give to you, but moreover, above that, part of my sacred portion above that was to help others around me. So all he's doing is announcing verbally what he's already done physically. And if that's not enough, here's more of the sacred portion. At the end of verse 13, I have not transgressed any of your commandments. Transgressed means willfully stepped over the line. This isn't, he's not saying I've never sinned. He's not saying, well, I got to the promised land and now I'm perfect. Look at me. It's not what he said. He said, but since I'm in the promised land, I have not willingly noted your law and then stepped over the line and completely disobeyed it. That is, I've been caught and I've disobeyed a few times and I've done some dumb things, but I have not looked at your law and said, that's one of God's laws I'm not going to keep. Because transgress means to know the law and then step over it. So he's saying, I haven't done that either. That's part of my sacred portion to you, God, is there's been no willingness in my heart to obey you knowingly. And then he also says, I have not transgressed any of your commandments, nor have I forgotten them. That's not one of those, oh, I didn't remember that. I didn't realize that it was. I'm going to deliberately set this aside. I'm going to pretend I never saw this. I'm going to pretend that it was not known by me. So he's saying, Lord, not only have I not seen your law and willingly disobeyed it, but I haven't pretended that I didn't know your law. In fact, not only have I not forgotten it, but in order that I wouldn't forget it, I've actively kept your law in front of me. I've talked to the Levite in the town, and I've memorized your word, and I've done what I can to keep your law ever before me. That's what David says over and over in Psalm 119. I have not forgotten your law because I've kept it ever before me. So there was an effort to make sure you wouldn't forget the law of God. So these are all sacred offerings that this man has brought to God even before he showed up at the temple at third year that day. It's where his life demonstrated that he was living to show God his appreciation. This is not salvation. Salvation is when God makes you sacred. Salvation is when God sets you apart and God sees where you're headed and you realize that and he opens your eyes and you say, I need you, God, and you give yourself to him. That is his promise to make you sacred. He sets you apart and he seals you and promises you forever you'll be with him. Your sacred offering back to God, your way to honestly say, I'm thankful for what God's done for me, is when you determine to set aside a portion of what you earn. When you determine to keep God's law before you. When you determine to not deliberately disobey God's law. That's how you say thank you to God. These are the physical declarations. Romans 12, 1:21 puts it this way. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. But they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. You see, when we decide not to honor God, we decide not to give thanks to him, we become futile in our thinking and our hearts become hardened. We need to be deliberately involved in honoring and thanking God. A sacred thanksgiving gives honor, gives thanks to God. And that also includes your finances. Listen to 2 Corinthians 9, 6 through 9. The point is this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. Whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has decided in his heart and reluctantly and not under compulsion. For God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all times, you may abound to every good work. As is written, he has distributed freely, he has given to the poor, his righteousness endures forever. So there needs to be a thankful attitude, not only with our activity and our action, but with our finances as well. That is our sacred offering to God. So we have a verbal statement of thanksgiving. We reflect back on the question, who were we? How did Christ rescue us? What does our promised land look like now? What has he done for us? We have a physical activity of responding to what God has done for us, our sacred activity back to him as we give to the church and to the needy. We celebrate God with the church and the needy. We don't willingly and knowingly overstep the law of God. We don't deliberately set aside or ignore God's laws. We give honor and thanks to God, and we take God's financial portion seriously. We take these things seriously. So we clearly have a role in thanksgiving. We've arrived at the temple. We've come before God. We appreciate he's given us salvation. We have a role, a way, a method to show him thanks. Is God done? So he saves us, and that's all? All he's got to do is save us, and there's no other obligation on his part? Well, not according to verse 15. Because after you've made that declaration to God of all the things you haven't done and all the things you've honored, look at verse 15. Look down from your holy habitation from heaven and bless your people Israel and the ground that you've given us as you swore to our fathers, a land flowing with milk and honey. That's rather fascinating, because in the 21st century mind of the believer, we would not considering asking God to bless people. We would say, I've given to you, I've followed you, I've done what's right for you, so now bless me. You're now obligated, God, to bless me. But throughout Scripture, God hardly ever addresses the believer as an individual. Almost always addresses his people as a people in a community. So if you are walking with God and honoring God and being thankful to God and giving your sacred offerings to God but not seeing the blessing of God, it doesn't mean that God's not responding. It means that he could be using your specific giving and blessing the community. The role that we then ask God is, God, because I am being faithful to you, will you then be faithful to us, not just me? I've come forward in my part, God, I'm being faithful to you, so that you also, I would ask, would be faithful to us. You're not twisting his arm, you're not demanding it, but you're also not being self-centered in your walk with the Lord. You are serving God so that others will be blessed. And the guy next to you is serving God so that you'll be blessed. It keeps the selfishness out of the issue of why we serve and honor God. It's basically bless the community, God, because I'm being faithful to you. So we've taken a look today, though we're a couple weeks past the holiday of Thanksgiving, and we're a couple weeks short of the holiday Christmas. And so I want to take a look at both. Thanksgiving, obviously, is the breakup of the two words, Thanksgiving. We've talked about that. Christmas is the religious celebration. That's what a mass is. It's a sacred celebration, a religious celebration of an event. So Christ Mass, Christmas, is the religious or sacred celebration of Christ. In this sense, is coming to the world. And so we want to take a look at now both of those together. And let's see how here in Deuteronomy we get a really good definition for thanksgiving in these last couple of verses. Look at verse 16 of Deuteronomy. This day the Lord your God commands you to do these statutes and rules. You shall therefore be careful to do them with all your heart and with all your soul. This is how you're going to give thanks to God. You have declared today that the Lord is your God and that you will walk in his ways and keep his statutes and his commandments and his rules and will obey his voice. So that's your thanksgiving to God, your declaration. Not to be perfect, but to do the best of your ability to do these things, to walk in his ways, keep his statutes and his commandments, and obey his voice. Then God says to you in verse 18, and the Lord has declared today that you are a people for his treasured possession, as he has promised you, and that you are to keep all his commandments, and that he will set you in praise and in fame and in honor high above all nations that he has made, that you shall be a people holy to the Lord your God as he has promised. What does God say to you? You are my treasured possession. This translation of treasured possession is that gift, that item, that jewel that you receive and then hold close to your chest. It's the idea that it's so precious to you that you keep it right there. It'll be the gift you get on Christmas Day that you keep an eye on all day long. They most likely they're going to find you having, holding on to, protecting, watching over, or talking about. You're holding it close to the chest. And that's what that treasure possession translates. God says, you are my treasure possession. I hold you close to my chest. I think of you fondly. You are treasured. And you are treasured above many things. Look what happens next. He says that he's going to set you. God is going to set you, again, you as a people, as a group of people, in praise and fame and honor above all the nations. So in other words, back then it was Israel that was to be lifted up by in their obedience to be lifted up in praise and honor and fame. And scriptures say that Israel was the most blessed nation, at times the richest nation, had the wealthiest kings, the smartest leaders as they followed and walked with God, that other nations came to them for advice and for help and for protection. Well, the church now is to be that group of people that come together, and as they put God first, then they become that light to the community, that no matter where you're at, that the church is a thing that rises above no matter what nation it's in and what community it is. The church that is the jewel of God's eyes. And that's what happens when we as believers walk in community together and worship Him and honor Him and then allow Him to bless us as a community. And finally, at the end of that, He says that you shall be a people holy to the Lord your God. You shall be set apart. God's promise is, as you walk in thankfulness to me, but not just verbal thankfulness, but physical, sacred thankfulness in your activities, then you will be set apart. You will be sacred. You will be holy before me. And then those last three words, as He promised. It's a promise He makes to Israel. It's a promise He makes to us. We can see that in our thanksgiving to God returns even more willingness for us to want to be thankful to Him. But let's take a look now at how this is also just a great connection of really a summary of the Bible as a whole. This is a summary of Christmas, these last couple verses. One author writes, the story of Jesus' birth has everything a really exciting story needs. It has a brave hero and a heroine, long journeys, visits from heavenly beings, a bad guy, and a prince who grows up to be the king. And that's the story of Christmas. Now, I don't anticipate that many of you would bother to watch the story of Christmas. Joe Smith gets his iPad. I don't think you're going to spend 30 minutes to an hour watching that show. Because ultimately, even though we know Christmas is gift-giving, we know that that's not the heart of Christmas. Let me give you some examples that really represent the heart of Christmas. Christmas is the cold man receiving a room, a bed, a meal, and a blanket. Christmas is the lonely child receiving daddy home for the holidays. Christmas is the young wife receiving her husband back from war. Christmas is the foster child in a home of love. Christmas is the orphan adopted at last. Christmas is the elderly visited and not forgotten. Let me just pause here and say, if you are elderly or not, if you are a person or a couple that for some reason will not be visited on Christmas Day by family, you have nowhere to go, give me a call. We'll find room for you at our house. Let us know ahead of time. Don't assume that we know that, because there are many people in this church who come to me in the last couple weeks of Christmas and say, my home's wide open to whoever wants to come and be a part of it. So please, if you're in that position and you are looking at a lonely Christmas, assume that I don't know that, but that I want to know that, and that there's other people in the church that want to know that, and then let's make sure you're not lonely on Christmas. Christmas is brothers reconciled after years of silence. Some of you may need to offer that gift by making a phone call and starting reconciliation. Christmas is baby's first Christmas after years of barrenness. Christmas is forgiveness and restoration. Christmas is when the impossible becomes possible. Christmas is the peasant blessed by the king. See, we love those Christmas stories where the downtrodden gets rescued by the hero, where the loser gets captured and raised to the winner status. We love those stories. But why? Because that is the story of Christmas. You want the story of Christmas? It's right here, not in Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, and not in Isaiah. It's right here in Deuteronomy. You want the story of Christmas? It's right here. Deuteronomy chapter 26, verse 18. The Lord has declared today that you are a people for His treasured possession. That's Christmas. And He has promised, as He has promised you, and that you are to keep all His commandments, He will set you in praise and in fame and in honor, high above all nations that He has made. You shall be a people holy to the Lord your God, as He has promised. I want to invite some ladies to come on up, and they're going to close us in a song that is not normally a Christmas song, but I've decided to declare it a Christmas song because I think it expresses the words of this passage in Deuteronomy 26. The summary of the Bible is that how amazing that God, Almighty God, would give lowly people an opportunity to be called His children and express their thanks to Him. And if they have trouble remembering, what am I thankful for, that He would remind us, you're a treasured possession. You're held in honor and fame above all nations. You are set apart. You are the fulfillment of His promise. And I think the words of this song bring it home to us. Now, I want to encourage you that if you just want to come down here and express your thanks, if you want to give your verbal thanksgiving to God this morning and come down and just tell him how thankful you are that he rescued you, that he changed you, that he's walking with you now, then feel free to do that. You don't have to come down to do that, obviously, but you're welcome to. If you were thinking, wait a minute, I'm on the outside looking in. I'm still the guy who's walking down the wrong road, that I haven't really received or been called the treasure possession of God. If you want to start that journey, if you want today to be that day, then come down and talk to me or one of the leaders of the church, and we'd be glad to share with you and help you say, this was the day, and this was the method, and this was the route where God saved me. But feel free to make a response as the Lord leads you. And then we are going to take our elder's offering during this song. And so after you've given that elder's offering, if you want to stand and worship with us, that's great. Or come on down. I would appreciate it. The elder's offering goes to those in need in the church and those in need in the community. And if you're one of those people in need, come see us. We want to help you out as well. So let's enjoy the words of the song as we take this offering.